Carnival is the biggest and, I would argue, most successful and most influential company when it comes to cruises. In 1989, they surpassed $1 billion in revenue, and by 2024, that number had grown to surpass $25 billion. Two-thirds of that revenue comes from ticket purchases, while the other third comes from onboard revenue, the money that the passengers spend while on the cruise for extra stuff, like drinks or maybe gambling. In 2024, they reported 13.5 million passengers, which represents around 42% of the global market, while their closest competitor, Royal Caribbean, only held a 27% share of the market. The company operates multiple cruise lines around the world, including P&O Cruises in the United Kingdom, Costa Cruises in Italy, and Ada Cruises in Germany, all of which carry over 1 million passengers each year. But of course, their most popular and most recognizable brand is, in fact, Carnival, based in Miami, Florida. The Carnival cruise line currently consists of 29 ships categorized under 10 different classes, with 5 additional ships under contract for construction set to debut by 2033. As I'm sure you can hardly tell by all of this, they offer a variety of options for anyone looking to spend their vacation on a cruise ship. The industry has practically exploded over the past 50 plus years, with more people going on cruises now than ever before, and Carnival has been the number one company to benefit from it. So in this video, I would like to explore how Carnival has grown and helped shape the industry while identifying what I believe to be 5 of the main reasons behind its success. Starting off, well, I guess at the beginning, with the Arison family. I mean, the founder of Carnival, Ted Arison, an immigrant to the United States from Israel, has been nicknamed the godfather of the modern cruise industry. Long before Carnival existed, he had experience with similar businesses. He ran his family's shipping company, he operated his own fleet of cargo ships, and even helped establish the company that would later become Norwegian Cruise Line. Well, in 1972, he teamed up with a partner and spent around $6.5 million to buy an ocean liner called Empress of Canada that they renamed Mardi Gras. However, only about 2 years into the business, Ted Arison bought out his partner's share of the company for the price of $1, along with the assumption of $5 million of debt that the company still held. I will go into more detail shortly, but he is partially responsible for making cruises more attractive and more accessible to the general public. In 1979, his son Mickey Arison took over as CEO of the company, a position that he held for the next 34 years, and in 1990, his son also took over as chairman of the board, a position that he still holds to this day. A couple side notes that I think are worth mentioning here is that when Ted left the company in 1990, he moved back to his home country of Israel, where he invested in a bunch of other businesses, like in 1997, when he spent over $1 billion to buy a controlling stake of the largest bank in the country. Also, in 1995, Mickey Arison bought a controlling stake in the Miami Heat NBA team, where he quickly hired Pat Riley as president, and anyone who follows basketball would respect the impact of that decision and understand why Mickey Arison was recently inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame. According to Forbes, his net worth is just under $10 billion, so Ted and Mickey Arison have proven themselves to be impactful businessmen behind multiple companies. My next reason behind their success is going to be the Love Boat, and I realize this might sound ridiculous at first, but give me a minute to explain. Before the 1970s, the vast majority of people had never been on a cruise. It was like less than 1% of the country. I do not even think that most people realized they existed. Well, the Love Boat premiered in September of 1977, and for the next decade, it was one of the most popular shows on television. It took place on a cruise ship and is credited with introducing the concept to millions of people across the country. Simply put, people would watch the show and it would make them want to go on a cruise. To be clear, the concept was already creeping into pop culture, but the show really propelled it forward as the single greatest example of it. Another great example you might recognize would be the song We Are the Champions from Queen. You know that one line where he says, "It's been no bed of roses, no pleasure cruise," which oddly enough was released within weeks of the first episode of The Love Boat. Considering Carnival Carnival, Royal Caribbean, and Princess had all started within the past 12 years. They were all emerging companies that were greatly benefiting from the popularity of the show. In fact, Princess specifically was the brand of ship featured on the show, and the actor who played the captain of the boat, Gavin McLeod, later became their spokesperson for an unprecedented 35 years. Which, believe it or not, is related to the next reason on my list, reinvesting. 3 years into the business, very early on, Carnival started turning a profit, and that money was instantly reinvested, resulting in a fleet of 4 cruise ships by the end of that first decade. 1982 marked the debut of the Tropicale, considered to be kind of a turning point within the industry. At the time, most cruise ships, including those first 4 bought by Carnival, were repurposed ocean liners, meaning they were older ships originally built to transport people long distances that were converted into entertainment-focused cruise ships. To be clear, competing companies, including Royal Caribbean, already had ships built for this purpose, but the scale and the timing of the Tropicales sort of sparked a new trend where a bunch of cruise ships were now being built. I do want to mention that the Tropicale is also notable because it was the first Carnival ship to have that iconic red, white, and blue whale's tail-shaped funnel that has since become a distinguishing feature on their ships, helping shape the brand's identity. In 1987, Carnival had an initial public stock offering that raised almost $400 million that, again, was reinvested, specifically when they bought Holland America Line shortly after that, which is considered to be their first major acquisition. The deal included 4 cruise vessels, along with hotel and land operations, that were reported to increase their capacity by about 50%. That was then followed by other acquisitions and purchases that allowed them to serve new people in new markets around the world, but the biggest one of these was in 2003 when they bought P&O Princess Cruises for over $5 billion. Remember, Princess is the brand that was popularized by the Love Boat, so this deal, I guess, further supports the second reason on my list. Carnival was already the largest cruise company in the world, ahead of Royal Caribbean, and here, they were lengthening that lead by acquiring the 3rd largest cruise company. It was wild circumstances. Following 9/11, the entire travel industry was suffering, and it was looking like it would be beneficial for some of these cruise companies to join forces. You know, strength in numbers and economies of scale. Well, at first, it was looking like Royal Caribbean and P&O Princess were going to combine, which would have created a new market leader, but in the end, Carnival was able to offer more money. They paid a 9% premium over their stock price and protected that number one position that they have continued to hold on to ever since. These are just a few of the many highlights to show how Carnival has kept their foot on the accelerator to maintain their dominance over the market. Next up on my list is what Carnival has trademarked as fun ships, which is pretty straightforward. Clearly, a company with the name Carnival wants to deliver a fun experience, right? Which was surprisingly uncommon back when they started. Back then, cruises were generally considered to be dull and stuffy activities, mostly intended for older rich people. You know, the people eating caviar were the same people that were going on cruises, not your everyday individuals looking for a fun vacation. There was very little mass market appeal before Carnival set out to change that perception. They say on their website that they revolutionized the cruise industry with a vision to make a vacation experience once reserved for the wealthy accessible to everyone. Compared to the typical cruise available at the time, Carnivals were generally slower, shorter, and much less expensive. They would include casinos and discos and water slides and all these other activities to create a party-like atmosphere to entertain the passengers. In short, going on a cruise became much more about the journey rather than the destination, which I think you will agree has become the new standard for cruise ships. I think of this as like a Chuck E. Cheese situation. The games are mostly there to keep everyone entertained while they're waiting for the pizza to come out, but then in the end, the games often end up being the most memorable part of the experience. My final reason behind the success of Carnival is mostly an extension of the previous one, and that is going to be their marketing. When offering something that is so new and different from what most people have come to expect, you really have to make an effort to put the word out about it, and Carnival has been doing that from the very beginning. The first ever voyage taken by a Carnival cruise got stuck on a sandbar outside the port of Miami. Over 500 passengers were stuck there for, I believe, over 24 hours, which sounds like a terrible start. But in the end, it turned out to be a bit of a blessing in disguise. Those passengers were served free drinks and continued to have a party, so when news outlets reported on the the story, it turned out to be free publicity for the fun atmosphere that they were trying to create on those ships. In 1984, over a decade later, they spent $10 million on a network television campaign, really the biggest ever campaign for a cruise company at that point, and some of the commercials were even aired during episodes of The Love Boat. Those commercials featured Kathy Lee Gifford singing about how much fun it was to go on a Carnival cruise, and I have to admit that those commercials do make it seem like a fun time. She continued to be their spokesperson for the next 20 years, and ever since, most of Carnival's marketing has been focused on fun, like one of their more recent campaigns featuring the word Thunderstruck, that I admit, I just wanted to say that word here. Carnival has gone on to buy Super Bowl commercials, and I would say overall has done a great job in getting the brand out there while conveying a lighthearted image. Let me know in the comments, what are your thoughts about Carnival compared to the other cruise options? What I mean is, for anyone that has been on a cruise before, was it provided by Carnival, and what were the factors that went into that decision? Was it the price, the activities, the location, or whatever else? What do you think separates them the most? I am also curious if you would be interested in a video about Royal Caribbean, maybe comparing them to Carnival or the rest of the market. If you thought that this was a good topic, that would probably be the logical next step, so let me know what you think. Finally, how do you feel about the reasons on my list, and do you think anything should be added or subtracted from it? I realize that the reinvesting section specifically could go really deep when you start talking about all these ships over the years, so please feel free to add to that discussion. And any other thoughts you have about Carnival, leave them in the comments. I'd like to hear what you have to say. Thank you for watching.